design, genomics, it cannot translate this biological revolution, the enormous potential that exists now, into public health, either in this country and, of course, even less around the world.
I want to thank you for being with us. Again, we're going to post immediately today part two of our interview with author and historian Mike Davis. His new book, Set the Night on Fire, L.A. in the 60s. We will continue with part two of our conversation, talking about socially distanced protests around the country. A very special happy birthday to Mike DeFilippo. That does it for our show. And a deep appreciation for all the team that works around the country working on this show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay safe.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO programming is made possible by our members and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven natural foods cooperative open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a weekly farmers market every Wednesday, year-round. Located at Southeast Tibbet Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years, and also online at peoples.coop.
KBOO Community Radio brings you a public service announcement from Prepare for Your Care.
I'm Erica Moseson, a lung and ICU doctor, offering you information on how to be prepared in case you or a loved one have to come to the hospital. Have a go bag ready with a list of your medications, the names and numbers of important contacts, especially your medical decision maker, in case you become so sick you can't speak for yourself, and also include copies of important medical documents, like an advance directive if you have one. You can find more information on what to include in your go bag, selecting a medical decision maker, and sharing your wishes at prepareforyourcare.org.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley's Republican opponent in the general election is outed as a QAnon believer. Today is the deadline for submission of arguments against Governor Brown's stay-at-home order. And in national news, President Trump may have broken Michigan state law during a visit to a Ford plant yesterday. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 22nd, 2020. I'm Althea Billings. Churches involved in an Oregon lawsuit have until Friday to submit arguments to the state Supreme Court. The lawsuit, Elkhorn Baptist Church versus Governor Kate Brown, claims the governor's stay-at-home order exceeds the 28 days of emergency powers that are allowed in the state's constitution. The suit claims that the order violates their religious freedom to worship. The churches contend that the Constitution says that in the event of a catastrophic disaster, the governor must convene the legislature within 30 days to extend emergency powers. On Monday, Baker County Judge Matthew Shurtcliffe ruled the order null and void, but after an emergency appeal from the governor's office, the Oregon Supreme Court put a stay on that ruling. The court's stay blocks Shurtcliffe's decision until all the high court justices can review arguments regarding the lawsuit. In comments to Oregon Live earlier this week, Elkhorn Baptist Church attorney Kevin Mannix said, quote, "We're not saying Oregonians be foolish about the coronavirus pandemic. It depends on where you are and to be responsible in that context." Advocates for the church say it's not about ignoring health and safety guidelines as much as it is about checking the governor's power and allowing residents in affected rural areas to attend church. Shurtcliffe's decision covered, quote, any and all orders issued in response to the pandemic. To date, the governor has issued 20 orders, closing schools, placing a moratorium on evictions, and requiring grocery stores and pharmacy workers to wear masks, just to name a few. Her prohibition on gatherings of 25 or more directly impacts most churches. Brown has maintained that easing COVID restrictions too soon could cause devastating effects, particularly in areas where little or no testing is happening. In a statement on Monday night, the governor said, quote, "There are no shortcuts for us to return to life as it was before this pandemic. Moving too quickly could return Oregon to the early days of the crisis." The stay remains in effect until the Supreme Court rules. A date for the hearing has not been set as of yet. In a related event earlier today, President Trump announced that he would be classifying churches as essential so they can reopen during the pandemic. He demanded that churches be reopened this weekend, saying, quote, "If they don't do it, I will override the governors." But this is not something that he can do, as he found out last month when he tried to force governors to reopen their states. Most observers felt this was a transparent attempt by Trump to pander to evangelical Christians, who are a key component of his base. The Oregon Health Authority released statistics on Thursday showing that half of Oregon's counties are struggling to maintain Phase 1 public health benchmarks. The number of new infections has spiked in many of these counties since Governor Kate Brown authorized their reopening on May 15th. The counties in question are failing to meet at least one of the state's metrics, which follows numbers of new infections and hospitalizations, as well as the capacity of contact tracing. Counties like Deschutes, Lane, and Marion have seen new infections increase by more than 5% in the past week since reopening. Deschutes County in particular has seen spikes in case numbers linked to community gatherings. Since the county entered Phase 1 on May 15th, contact tracers have investigated 26 positive cases, most of whom are in the 20 to 29-year-old age range. Deschutes was one of many counties permitted to reopen despite having low numbers of contact tracers on staff. Officials throughout Oregon are bracing for a spike in cases with larger gatherings permitted during Memorial Day weekend. Oregon health officials are closely watching these counties to ensure they meet metrics surrounding infections, testing, and contact tracing. If they fail to deliver on their promises, these countries risk returning to full restrictions. In a bizarre turn of events, the Washington Post reported that on Tuesday, Oregon Republicans nominated a QAnon supporter to run against incumbent Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley in the November general election. KBOO's Lisa Loving has this report.
The Washington Post this week reports that Oregon Republicans' new U.S. Senate nominee is a QAnon supporter who believes in a deep state conspiracy against President Donald J. Trump. Joe Ray Perkins on Tuesday won the GOP's nomination to run against Senator Jeff Merkley in November. Perkins has deleted a video posted to her Twitter account on election night in which she supports the QAnon conspiracy theory, saying, quote, "Where we go one, we go all. I stand with President Trump. I stand with Q and the team. Thank you, Anons, and thank you, Patriots, and together we can save our republic." The Willamette Week contacted Perkins on Wednesday, but she had no comment. Later, her campaign sent out a prepared statement. Perkins said, quote, "I was not endorsing QAnon, but rather stating that I appreciate the fact that there is still free speech in this country that allows for voices, including whistleblowers from both sides of the aisle, that may or may not bring to light issues Americans need to be aware of. Perkins has deleted the video, but you can watch it on WWeek.com. For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving, reporting in isolation.
The traditional Memorial Day start to summer is going to look different at Oregon coastal towns this year. 26 beach city mayors have co-signed a letter authored by Oregon Governor Kate Brown requesting that visitors stay home. In a key passage, the letter says, quote, "Today we are asking Oregonians to please keep it local this Memorial Day. Be good neighbors this weekend. Stay local and stay safe." Many of the mayors noted that their towns are only in the earliest stages of Phase 1 reopening and are not yet ready to see the huge influx of visitors they normally see on this holiday weekend. They're also remembering the flood of people that descended on them during the spring break 2 months ago and are not ready to face that again. In comments to K2, Newport Mayor Dean Sawyer said, quote, "Some of these hotels, motels, restaurants, and gift stores still have a lot of work to get ready for everyone to come, so we ask everyone to wait a week." Tillamook Mayor Suzanne Weber expressed similar concerns and requested more time to get ready. She said, quote, "I'm hoping that common sense will prevail and people will honor that." Many coastal towns expect to be in Phase 2 by the first week of June, and the mayors are hoping that people will wait until then to visit. The Oregon Department of Corrections announced that a prison inmate held at the Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem has died of COVID-19. He's the first prisoner in Oregon to die of the virus. In a short release, the Oregon Department of Corrections said that an unnamed inmate between the ages of 50 and 60 died Wednesday after being transferred to a hospital. With the first confirmed case just over a month ago, Department of Corrections now confirms the state's prison systems has 148 inmates and 38 employees that have tested positive. Social distancing protocols are nearly impossible to implement in prisons, where many inmates sleep in dormitories with beds less than 4 feet apart. Inmates with COVID-19 symptoms are being placed in solitary confinement or moved to medical isolation units in the Coffee Creek and Snake River Correctional Institutions. Despite a push from families and a lawsuit by the Oregon Justice Resource Center, Governor Kate Brown has not indicated a willingness to reduce prison populations to allow for adequate social distancing. According to OPB, the prisoner who died is one of three who were hospitalized yesterday. The condition of the other two is unknown. Gresham residents had a surprise visitor Thursday afternoon when an adult black bear paid a visit to a neighborhood near Red Sunset Park. Police began responding to calls shortly after 2 p.m. after receiving multiple tips about sighting a bear. Within the hour, 24 officers were on the scene at the 700 block of Northeast 16th Court, searching for the animal as calls reporting the sightings continued to pour in. Gresham police issued warnings to people to stay away from the area of south of Stark Street between Cleveland Drive and Hogan Road. They advised residents to remain indoors with their pets. By early evening, calls regarding the bear tapered off, and it appears that the animal had moved on. Residents are reminded that if they spot a bear, they should report it immediately and maintain a safe distance. The temporary rules that allowed customers to pump their own gas in Oregon are ending Saturday night, May 23rd. The Oregon Office of the State Fire Marshal lifted the ban on self-service gas stations in March to deal with the coronavirus pandemic. The office was concerned about the ability to keep personal interaction and distancing between customers and employees limited, and to deal with an industry facing a diminished workforce. Beginning Sunday, gas attendants will again be providing service in any regions of the state where self-serve was prohibited prior to the pandemic. For some coastal and eastern Oregon counties, self-service gas is allowed under limited circumstances that will not change in those areas. In a statement Thursday evening, State Fire Marshal Jim Walker thanked Oregonians for their patience. He also thanked businesses and workers in the gasoline industry for temporarily allowing self-serve gas where it had not been allowed before. In a sign that the apocalypse may not yet be at hand, yesterday Powell's Books announced that they are now offering curbside contactless pickup at their downtown Portland location. A spokesperson for the iconic company said that the contactless pickup will protect the health and safety of the community. They could not yet say when the store would be open to the public. Interested customers can shop online and choose store pickup at checkout. They would then indicate a date and time to schedule that pickup. They would occur outside the store at the entrance on Northwest 11th and Cooch Street. Customers are urged to visit Powells.com for information on book availability as well as store updates regarding the ongoing pandemic. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6 o'clock, we'll hear Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight's weather will bring us a partly cloudy evening with an overnight low in the mid-40s and winds picking up to 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, we can look forward to cloudy skies in the morning, giving way to a mix of clouds and sun in the afternoon. On this day in 1967, the children's television show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood premiered on Pittsburgh Public TV Station. The program ran for over 30 years. The quote of the day is from Mr. Rogers, who said, quote, "It's not so much what we do in life that matters, it's what we do with what we have." President Trump visited a Ford plant in Michigan and did not wear a mask the entire time he was on site. The behavior may have broken a Michigan law. For more on the story, here's KBOO's Ray Bodwell.
While touring a Ford Motor Company plant in Ypsilanti, Michigan yesterday, President Trump did not wear a mask for at least part of his visit. The plant had been reconfigured to produce ventilators and personal protective equipment for use during the coronavirus pandemic. The company had indicated before the visit that the president should wear a mask at the factory, and under current Michigan law, everyone must wear a mask when visiting an indoor facility with many people. When asked if Trump was told it was acceptable not to wear a mask in the plant, the Ford executive chairman Bill Ford said, quote, "It's up to him." But despite the fact that all the company executives and employees were wearing a mask, the president evidently didn't feel those rules applied to him. And when asked why he wasn't wearing a mask, he had this response.
"I had one on before. I wore one in this back area, but I didn't want to give the press the pleasure of seeing it."
He then went on to claim that it wasn't necessary that he wear a mask.
Not necessary here. Well, everybody's been tested and I've been tested. In fact, I was tested this morning, so it's not necessary.
In an interview on CNN later in the day, Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel had a blistering assessment of the president's behavior.
"Today's events were extremely disappointing and yet totally predictable. And I will say that, you know, understanding, of course, that his own doctor, Dr. Fauci, his own medical expert, recommends the wearing of masks in public enclosed spaces. The CDC makes that recommendation. In Michigan, of course, now that is the law. And in fact, a court just upheld that, just upheld the governor's orders just hours ago, and even in Ford, it is their own policy. So the president is like a petulant child who refuses to follow the rules. And I have to say, this is no joke. I mean, you just reported that 93,000 people have died in the United States. He's in a county right now where over 100 people have died. I am 20 minutes away from him in Wayne County, where we've had over 2,300 people die. This is not a joke. And he's conveying the worst possible message to people who cannot afford to be on the receiving end of terrible misinformation, and is very, very concerning."
She also expressed concern that Ford officials allowed the president to go without a mask and questioned the example that the president was setting.
"I think that we're going to have a very serious conversation with Ford in the event that they permitted the president to be in publicly enclosed places in violation of the order. They knew exactly what the order was, and if they permitted anyone, even the president of the United States, to defy that order, I think it has serious health consequences potentially to their workers. And this was a lengthy negotiation and discussion between the UAW, the big three auto manufacturers, and our governor to ensure that people, if they went back to work, they would be safe. The last thing we want to see is for this particular plant now to have to close its doors and shutter its doors again because someone may have been infected by the president. And that is a real possibility, but it also sends a message that anybody can do whatever they want because, look, the president did it, so why can't I?"
The president has continued to ignore the advice of top public health experts and the guidelines prepared by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. He refuses to wear a mask in public and has urged states to rapidly reopen despite the likelihood of a second surge. Trump and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer have clashed repeatedly over the governor's refusal to quickly reopen the state for business and its recent plan to expand mail-in voting. As of this morning, the virus has been confirmed in over 1.5 million Americans and has claimed over 95,000 lives. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
In an interview that aired this morning on The Breakfast Club, a popular venue for Democratic candidates to sell their message to black voters, former Vice President Joe Biden ignited an internet firestorm with his response to a question from co-host Charlamagne Tha God. When questioned about his race record and running mate selection, the presumptive Democratic nominee said, quote, "If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black," end quote. Biden's remarks immediately ignited a digital firestorm and provoked outrage from Democrats and Republicans alike. Tim Scott of South Carolina, the only black Republican senator, called the former vice president's comments arrogant and condescending. Scott tweeted, quote, "1.3 million black Americans already voted for Trump in 2016. This morning, Joe Biden told every single one of us, we, quote, ain't black." Meanwhile, Biden's senior advisor, Simone Sanders, sought to calm the backlash, insisting that Biden's comments were made in jest. Sanders tweeted, quote, "Let's be clear about what the VP was saying. He was making the distinction that he would put his record with the African-American community up against Trump's any day, period," unquote. In a call with the U.S. Black Chambers this afternoon, Biden addressed the backlash and said he regretted his breakfast show comments about black voters, saying he would never take the African-American community for granted. A new online chat function was launched this week to help Native Americans struggling with abuse. With that story and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Strongheart's Native Helpline launched a new online chat function this week to better assist Native American and Alaska Native people experiencing abuse. Christine Trudeau reports the expansion of services as part of a long-term goal.
Back in March, as COVID-19 safety restrictions amped up across Indian country, Strongheart's Native Helpline saw a dip in their calls that has continued through May. Director Lori Jump says that may be due to survivors sheltering in place at home with an abusive partner, making it all the more difficult to make a phone call when help is needed.
You know, it's much easier to send a chat message because it's a silent form of communication, right? And so you're not having to worry about somebody overhearing you on the phone.
In addition to their phone support line 1-8447-NATIVE, the chat icon can be found on their website at strongheartshelpline.org. Support advocates are available with educational resources, referrals to local programming for callers for ongoing support, and safety planning.
You know, talk to people about how they can stay safe, especially during this time of pandemic when, you know, we are sheltering in place and we are facing so much more stress and uncertainty. And while we know those things don't cause domestic violence, it does exacerbate the situation, which allows for an increase in violence to occur.
Phone services are available daily from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Central Time and via chat daily from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central. I'm Christine Trudeau.
This story is a collaboration with National Native News and the Solutions Journalism Network. In Rapid City, South Dakota, the Oyate Health Center takes precautions to prevent the spread of COVID-19, but the center has reported more than 30 positive cases since early May. As an act to honor frontline workers, a new mural is on display, as China Lockett reports.
The colorful banner shows a bear surrounded by sage with a buffalo skull. Bear Butte and the Black Hills are in the background. Derek, or Focus Smith, is a local muralist who repurposed his materials to create the piece. There are Lakota words at the top.
It's Wakaya Mayanipi Cha Filameyapi. Thank you for walking in a sacred way.
Smith wants the piece to be encouraging. He says the bear is the perfect representation of resilience during the pandemic. The animal is considered a healer in some Native cultures.
You hear stories about, you know, the bear being the natural doctor, or the doctor out in nature digging up roots and digging up medicines and digging up food. The symbology that he also encapsulates, you know, he has a great power that he has to carry with discernment. If he doesn't do these things, in the way that he's supposed to, then, you know, it can make him reckless.
Smith says it's a thank you to healthcare workers and community volunteers who work together to help each other stay safe.
Thank you for taking that time and that effort to put yourself in that position, and again, to walk in a sacred way, because it takes a lot of courage and a lot of confidence to place yourself in the way of that to help others.
Smith says the banner can be reused and relocated for support during trying times in the community. I'm Trina Lockett in Rapid City.
The Interior Department is extending the public comment period on development around Chaco Canyon. After a meeting with tribal leaders in New Mexico this week, Interior Secretary David Bernhardt indicated he would extend the deadline by 120 days as tribes deal with COVID-19. A number of tribes in the Southwest are fighting for protection of the area, which they hold sacred. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Over 1,000 Justice Department alumni filed an amicus brief demanding an independent review of Attorney General Bill Barr's request to drop charges against Michael Flynn. With more on the story, here's Lily Bolke with 2020 Talks.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory.
We are predominantly a Democratic state, more so than I think other states, and our cost of living is quite high and people work multiple jobs. And so there are a lot of reasons for why we have a low voter turnout rate.
Sandy Ma from Common Cause Hawaii says they're trying to change Hawaii's historically low voter turnout this year with vote by mail, especially in light of the new coronavirus. Presidential primary ballots must be delivered today to the Hawaii Democratic Party. The state-run congressional and local primaries are later this summer. Ma worries the devastating drop-off in tourism, on top of everything else, will take its toll on voter turnout.
We are really focused in Hawaii on just surviving, paying our rent, our mortgage, you know, where's our next meal coming from? So people are not so much focused on elections. We're not even seeing that much campaigning.
Campaigning has changed gears everywhere, according to Professor Daniel Kreese at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.
The president's own public appearances become much more limited in the time of corona. He can't hold the big rallies that he's famous for.
But what President Trump can do that his opponents can't is hold official governmental events in key swing states. His latest trip was to a Michigan Ford plant yesterday. He's visited other manufacturing plants and healthcare workers in Arizona and Pennsylvania in recent weeks, not always without controversy. Yesterday, he brought a mask but refused to wear it in front of cameras. Former Vice President Joe Biden is campaigning exclusively from his home in Delaware. In swing states, his campaign is holding online training sessions for volunteers. Kreese says they've also hired some of the best digital strategists in the business to catch up with Trump's operation.
What they've been doing is trying to figure out a way to mobilize constituent groups around the Democratic Party to get people excited, to get people engaged, to get people to spread, you know, Biden's message through their own social networks.
Lawyers are getting more engaged as the U.S. Department of Justice continues to make decisions that appear to favor the president politically. A group of Republican state attorneys general came out in support of U.S. Attorney General William Barr's request to drop charges against Michael Flynn. Flynn was Trump's first national security advisor, who pled guilty twice for lying to the FBI about communications with Russia. He withdrew his plea before being sentenced. In response, a bipartisan group of over 1,000 former federal prosecutors and their supervisors from the Justice Department filed a so-called Friend of the Court letter, or amicus brief, asking a D.C. district court for an independent judicial review of Barr's actions. One of those prosecutors, Christy Parker, spent 19 years at the Justice Department. She's part of the legal team from Protect Democracy, representing the former employees.
We've been very concerned throughout this administration that the Justice Department has been politicized and weaponized to not only act in President Trump's personal interest, but to act to favor his friends and to harm his perceived political opponents.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 22nd, 2020. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Jeffrey Wade, Hannah Merzbach, Lisa Loving, and Ray Bodwell. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is the always reliable Otto. Special thanks to Lily Bolke and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our listeners. If you'd like to support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give, or you can use our mobile app and click on Donate. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.